let's far out schemes, let's time decide what it should mean. It's not the time, but just the dreams that die. And sometimes when the room is still, time with so much truth to give, leaves you by the windowsill so tight. Without a wing,
without a wing,
take you high,
take you high,
without a clue,
without a clue,
to tell you why,
tell you why.
Now I just wanna keep my name, not bother anybody's game, without ideas of gold and fame or insane heights. I don't want a lot of money, I don't want a playboy bunny, just love me, honey, late at night,
in my arms,
by my side,
in my arms,
late at night.
I don't know, I ain't been told. Everybody wants a hand to hold me. So afraid of being old, so scared of life, so known, I'm so alone. Rolling home.
Well, I see the ones who crawl like moles before a front would trade their souls. The broken mirror's the only hole for them. And for you, who'd exchange yourself just to be somebody else, pretending things you never felt. Hey, you don't live,
you don't live,
but you depend,
but you depend,
and you can't give,
and you can't give,
so you just bend,
you just bend.
Now if you care what people think, like they supply some missing link, then just stand back and watch you sink so slow. They'll never help you to decide, they'll only take you for a ride, after which they try and hide the fact that they don't know what you should do,
what you should do, where you should go,
what you should do,
where you should go.
Go on, I don't know, I ain't been told. Everybody wants a hand to hold it, so afraid of being old, so scared of dying, so unknown and so alone, rolling home. There's nothing big I want to prove, no mountains that I need to move, or even claim what's quite true for you. My silent song is finally trying. You might think they missed the mark, but they proved me what they are. You're nothing new but for me.
But for me, I think they'll do for me.
Well, I can see a king and queen, a beggar falling at my feet. They all must see the same sad dreams at night. Futility and senseless war, pit the rich against the poor. What cause is buried long before the fight? But what was wrong,
but what was right?
It's just the strong, the weapons of what's right. But I don't know, ain't been told. Everybody wants a hand to hold it, so afraid of being old, so scared of dying, so unknown and so alone. Rolling home.
With Carrie, an attractive, well-clad, but impoverished person, correct?
Correct.
And you have a sign that says...
Help, I'm in need, please care. And I have the scripture Luke 6:30.
And is that having any impact on the theater line here?
Not today. It doesn't seem to be, no.
So it's actually the day after Valentine's Day, about 4:40, and... The line is long. Apparently there are some new movies that have just come out. Has the theater offered to let you in and to see the film?
Oh, no, not at all. Nope.
Local merchants have gotten together to give you a motel room?
No, nothing like that.
Mayor has come in and invited you to camp in the backyard?
No, and maybe Downtown Host might ask me to move along.
Downtown Host have asked you to move along?
Uh-huh.
How frequently does that happen?
Oh, weekly. Once a week.
And do you move along?
Yes, I do.
It's quite legal, you know, to stand here with a sign, in spite of what they say.
Yes, I knew that.
But you're just trying not to cause any trouble.
Exactly. Try to stay on a low profile.
But you have been seeking work and actually getting some tips about where to get jobs?
Yes, I have, from people on the street, and they've been good leads. I just haven't been employed yet.
Well, we will keep hoping that you can find some decent work in this high-profile, upscale town.
Yes, and decent means anything that I can do, anything. Minimum wage, $5. I'll take it.
All right. We'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, here we are. It's February 16th, 1997. We're down here at Cathcart and Pacific with Vicious
Rolling Thunder Sheraton. And I'm hearing the word from Sheraton. He's pointed out these large new lights that are not yet turned on at Cathcart Pacific, kind of floodlights. And here comes the vicious Baba Ito, as if things weren't bad enough. Sheraton also mentions that people at San Lorenzo Lumberyard are being ticketed for loitering. And any other complaints, Sheraton, before we can leave on?
Several hundred people today took over the railroad and a train in Paris, France today, homeless people. And they're holding it down. They're surrounded by riot squads and military police. There's a standoff situation going on in Paris right now where they're demanding fucking more places to live.
Well, I suppose we should all now troop down to Union Pacific, eh, Mike?
What else do you want to know?
What else you got?
We've also heard a report from Mike Sheraton that...
I'm here.
Uh-oh, Baba Ito is moving in for the kill. We've also heard a report from Mike Sheraton that the driver of the ISSP van was attacked with a bat by apparently a jealous lover and is in the hospital. But what's happening with the meal? John Earth, what's cooking, John?
Oh, just same old feedings, 5 nights a week.
You found a new place to brew your brew, so to speak.
Yeah, we've been cooking at somebody's apartment for a while, yeah.
And again, for our listeners, about what time every evening do you do this exciting...
Between 5:30 and 6.
And what days?
Every day but Wednesday and Thursday.
Any problems with merchants, hosts, or police?
No, none at all, actually.
I'm here.
They don't bother anybody anymore. They were told not to. Why, what's happening? Is there a problem?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
they're hassling
everything.
People up and down the mall.
Really? I just made an appointment with the congressman who's a friend of a friend of mine.
Uh-oh.
So, maybe we should talk.
Maybe so.
Yeah,
probably.
Putting that together.
Something
right.
Should happen. That's
yeah,
wrong.
It's going to have to happen. It's going to happen.
Lee. So we're talking to...
Lee.
And Lee, you say you're en route from Oregon to Santa Barbara?
That's correct.
And what's up?
Well, I'm going to take my tie-dyes I made up in Oregon down there, and I'm going to make me a little bit of money and hang out with some old friends.
Sounds good.
Yeah?
Where did you sleep last night?
Half Moon Bay. Very, very cold spot by a bridge, by a creek.
Any hassles?
No, I'm kind of invisible.
All right. And before that, the night before?
The night before was somewhere north coast. I can't really remember it because I don't really remember the name of the town. But I managed to get through San Francisco all right.
So you were hitching? Or?
Yeah, hitching down 101.
And you have friends in Santa Barbara you're off to see, or are you just going to start a revolution there?
Actually, it's an uncle down there.
So. That's nice. Yeah, I used to work in Santa Barbara as a homeless advocate, so
wait
to speak.
Wait a second. She's playing first.
So I've been homeless for years and years and years, and most of it was kind of cool because I was traveling with the dead, but now it's kind of by choice, I guess, because I don't really want to be part of the system.
And do you regard yourself as mentally ill, alcoholic, or hopelessly addicted to some illegal substance?
I have alcoholic tendencies at times, I suppose.
Do these make you, in your mind, unemployable?
Yes.
So would you say that you are, you don't seem you're not drunk at the moment?
No, I haven't had a drink in 4 days, but I've been traveling.
Right. So would you say that your normal lifestyle involves a lot of alcohol?
Generally, yes.
And how does this impact on your relations with people? Do you have continuing relationships with people anyway? Or?
Oh, yes. I have wonderful relationships with people. But
mostly with people who drink or non-drinkers?
Mostly with people who drink.
So, as an old bigot, a teetotaler myself, of course, I have to admit you probably find me a real bummer under those circumstances. But have you spent much time in Santa Cruz lately?
No, I just visited here a few times, and I thought I'd stop here on the way down. Seems nice. Again,
Ito here.
And we have our occasional Baba Ito always interjects a word or two.
Somebody make some homemade?
This is food, and you're welcome to have some. It's Feed the People.
This is like a Food Not Bombs?
It is a Food Not Bombs type operation. It's Feed the People in Santa Cruz, run by the erstwhile John Earth, who I'm happy to be here. John, here's another customer. From D-Bob. Hi, D-Bob.
Hi. Earlier this afternoon, I would estimate around 2 or 3 p.m., I observed a person sitting on the sidewalk already in handcuffs, and... when I asked the officer what he was being arrested for, he said he couldn't tell me, but it would it was up to him. And the person in cuffs told me that he was being arrested for playing music in Taco Bell.
Did he seem drunk to you or not?
He was straight, as far as I could tell. Supposedly Taco Bell filed a complaint for his presence there and playing music. And
he refused to leave? I mean, why handcuff him, take him to jail?
I don't know all the details on it. I just heard his side of it, that gave him trespassing charge for playing music at Taco Bell.
Now, do you know his name?
I don't know his name. The arresting officers were badge number 143 and Medina. At approximately Pacific Ave and Locust, three women were walking topless, and Officer Over questioned them. As far as I know, no citations were given, and then they went on down the mall.
Continued topless?
Yeah.
And did you hear the conversation?
I didn't hear the conversation. I wasn't able to get close enough, really, to hear the conversation.
Like an official conversation or just a friendly exchange?
It looked like a little bit of harassment for what they were doing.
What time of day did this happen?
2 p.m., I'd say.
Today?
Yes.
So we're here on Sunday the 16th. Thanks, Eva. And that was February 16th, 1997. It's now March 15th, 1997, a month later, and you're listening to Bath Robespierre's Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor on the Streets, What's Happening in the Courts Around the Sleeping Ban, Tales of Police Violence, Misconduct, and Occasional Commendable Police Behavior in Downtown Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Bath Robespierre Robert Norse. This is an hour and a half every week on Sunday at 11 o'clock on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, your free station here in Santa Cruz. We'll be with you for the next 80 minutes or so. We're going to be featuring testimony from Mayor Mike Rotkin, who testified at the Sleep Crime Chain Gang Lockdown Trial, a trial of six individuals arrested for chaining themselves to the podium of City Council last September 10th at a City Council meeting, where City Council had refused for a decade, or longer actually, since the law's inception in 1978, to put the sleeping ban on the agenda. The sleeping ban is a law which penalizes Santa Cruz's homeless population by making it a $162 fine to be outdoors, asleep, or covered up with blankets after 11, in your car or out of your car, on the ground, on any public and on much private property, with the exception of fenced-in side yards and backyards and parking in church parking lots with the permission of the church, no more than three vehicles. I always add that because Scott Kennedy, council member, has been attacking me regularly at City Council for not being exhaustive enough and specific enough in my accounts of these circumstances. So that's what this is. This is a program devoted to the civil rights of the poor, and if you have news to report on this issue, give me a call at 423-HUFF. That's 423-4833. Write that down, 423-4833. If you disagree with anything that's being said in this show, I will broadcast your response. All you have to do is leave a message of any length on my machine, and it'll be broadcast on the next show, assuming it has some redeeming social value, of course. What you've been listening to in the interviews has been a series of random street interviews that happened in mid-February, February 15th and 16th, and you'll be hearing, as I said, testimony of Mayor Mike Rotkin. In fact, we'll go into that right away. There's been a week-long jury trial of six people, each of them charged with two misdemeanors, disrupting a public assembly and trespass on public property. The jury is recessed, and they will return on Monday. That's Monday, March 17th. In Department 5 to resume their deliberations. Actually, they'll be deliberating elsewhere, but they will return to Department 5 when they have reached a verdict. And there are indeed 12 verdicts to be considered, because each of these six defendants has two charges and faces up to a year in jail and a $2,000 fine And the informal grapevine has it that Judge Tom Kelly, or Kangaroo Kelly, as I so fondly call him, has threatened to give the defendants at least 3 months each because of their insistence on exercising their jury trial rights. There's a seventh defendant, Joel Coates, who apparently is not at the trial for one reason or another, and I understand a warrant has been issued for his arrest. The defendants are Brandy Burgoyne, Lucas Stickney, Sean Nichols, Sandy Roth, Jim Costner, and Dan Hopkins. And these individuals have defended themselves by saying that what they did was not an intentional disruption, but depended to some extent on what happened at City Council and was a choice made in City Council. They brought chains to City Council. Mike Rotkin cut off the oral communications period. Others disrupted the audience by chanting. They did not until the recess happened. Some of them chanted before the recess when given permission to by Mayor Rotkin. It's kind of a complicated case. But for my money, it really boils down to the fact that they disrupted the council very briefly in what is a clear First Amendment exercise, and that the authorities are so anal, they're going to spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 of county money to try to punish homeless protesters, even though the protest was not repeated, and even though the city council has stayed snug as a bug in a rug, refusing to examine the sleeping ban, which, as of yesterday, now impacts another 100 people who were kicked out of the armory when the armory closed, probably for good, because there is no plan at the current time to reopen the winter armory shelter, which housed about 100 people. And in Santa Cruz, that leaves us with the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program for about 25 or 30 people per night out of Santa Cruz's city's 750 homeless population. The county's homeless population is variously estimated from 2,000 to 5,000 houseless people. Jury selection began on Tuesday. The trial itself actually began on Tuesday afternoon, and the trial ended on Friday, except for the jury deliberation. Now, the jury seemed to be a very sympathetic group of people, in spite of the attempts of both the prosecution and the judge to eliminate folks who might consider voting their conscience on this matter, even if the law says put them in jail, technically. And we're hoping to have later in the show the testimony of Mayor Mike Rotkin. However, before that happens, we have some interesting discussion with activist Tom Noddy. Tom and I had a phone conversation about a case that came up a couple weeks ago concerning a man who was ticketed by Officer Headley for sitting on the base of the Tom Scribner statue. That's the statue of the musical saw player that stands outside the bookshop Santa Cruz. Scribner himself was around and still alive and living in the St. George when this statue was commissioned and built. It originally was placed in what was called Scribner Park or Scope Park, a tiny bit of kind of greenery with a bench across from the town clock. And it was moved downtown later. The statue has been a frequent place where I've stood on top of it speaking to crowds of people at protests in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. And this fellow who went to trial in, unfortunately, meat grinder Mulligan's court. Mulligan is a referee, the traffic referee of the downstairs Department 10 court down there, who, again, be advised, always disqualify Mulligan. If you ever have any tickets, even traffic tickets, go to another court. It's worth going to a separate arraignment and going to a separate trial. Mulligan is a meat grinder who turns out fines for the city and is simply routinely prejudiced in favor of the police. And to disqualify Mulligan, all you have to do is go to the window of the clerks and say, hey, I want to disqualify him, and sign a statement that you believe he's prejudiced. That's your belief, and that's all you have to do. Anyway, here's a conversation between me and Noddy from a fellow who was not informed enough to disqualify Mulligan, and who eventually was found guilty, even though in my mind and Tom's mind, he was not guilty. He was engaging in customary use of the area. There's a shotgun statute that prohibits people from sitting on any property that is not customarily used for that purpose. And of course, the claim of the defendant was that a lot of people sit on the statue, and indeed, he got letters from a lot of store owners and store workers that they did so. But that didn't influence Meat Grinder Mulligan. No way. He found for the police, and he found for Officer Headley. Here's a conversation that Tom Noddy and I had. Tom is also the famous bubble man. You may know him. He has done bubbles on the Johnny Carson show. He's been instrumental in Santa Cruz in helping to arrange a peaceful and voluntary solution to the drummers' crisis. He and the other drummers, when the city council was threatening to pass legislation, effectively moved in to find an understanding with the residents who were concerned about too much noise a year ago in the downtown area. This is the kind of solution I think we need for other problems downtown. Rather than laws, we need people coming together. Anyway, here's Tom and I discussing this case on the phone.
March 6, 1997, it's about 1:15 in the afternoon. This is a phone interview with Tom Noddy.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, Edward.
So, Tom, you were recently present at a court trial in Referee Mulligan's court.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of a man, do we know his name?
Shaz.
Shaz, and his last name?
Renstedt, I think.
Renstedt, something like that. I remember that kind of an unusual spelling. And what was this man accused of?
Well, what he was accused of doing was sitting down on the base of the base that holds the statue of Tom Scribner's statue at the Pacific Avenue in the bar.
Near the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Correct.
And I believe Tom Scribner is a musical saw player and an old wobbly, an old radical unionist who you actually knew personally, who lived in the St. George Hotel in Santa Cruz.
You believe correctly.
And can you tell us something about, well, the fellow, I guess Chaz was accused of sitting on the statue. Is this an unusual kind of behavior, or what was this all about, Tom?
Okay, well, actually, those are two separate questions, or a few separate questions. Chaz's charge, in fact, had to deal with sitting. There's a city ordinance that forbids sitting, lying, being, I don't know, stretching, a whole lot of it, on the sidewalk, on the drinking fountains, on monuments, or, you know, in what would be regarded by the law as inappropriate places downtown. One shouldn't be sitting on the water fountain, and the city authorities should have recourse if you do, was the idea. And in those named places, they extended the law by suggesting that or any place else that is not designed for or customarily used for the purpose of sitting. I think the idea there was to, you know, so you couldn't say, oh, no, it doesn't say specifically, you know, this hunk of cement here or something like that. But, or, in fact, they didn't want to end up with a law that chased people away from sitting on a bench if they forgot to mention benches, you know, or forgive the sitting of benches.
You take a charitable view, Tom. I tend to think the reason the law is so broadly, to me, so vaguely written is to give police the power to remove people that they simply don't want downtown. And indeed, in the previous incarnation of this law, and that's Municipal Code 9.50.020, which has been changed slightly by the downtown ordinance that was passed in 1994, the famous Sit on the Sidewalk, Go to Jail law, collection of laws. It used to be that this ordinance was used to go after homeless people and hippies sitting on the planters that used to festoon Pacific Avenue when it really was the Pacific Garden Mall, and people would come out of the shops and sit on the planters and eat lunch. And middle-class people would not be harassed, and the people that the cops wanted to harass would be harassed. And I recall several trials in the same courtroom that you and I went to, and indeed we went to the basement courtroom at Department 10, where referee John Mulligan was presiding. I interrupted you to throw in that little bit of historical information, but did you want to say more?
Sure. Well, I'll give you a background on in fact what happened, and I agree with you. I was around when there was some concern about undesirable transient element coming and sitting on planter boxes down.
By undesirable transient element, are you talking about rogue, macho, redneck truckers?
You know, that they might by some have been included in that category if they got broken off. In fact, it was a phrase used at that time by the conservative majority and some of the business owners who were downtown.
Are you in fact talking about hippies and counterculture people and poor people and perhaps even, let's be a little more right-wing, bums that they didn't like around?
When you say I'm talking about that, I think you're correct in describing who they were referring to when they discussed the undesirable transient element. As you know, at the time, a good part of the community decided to take up the cause. People who lived in houses and lived in town and were progressive of mind and lifestyle decided to take up the cause of the undesirable transient element and sort of wearing and supporting the youths, as they started referring to themselves at the time.
And as I recall, not to digress too much from this, from Chaz's court case for sitting on Tom Scribner's monument, you yourself were involved in organizing to resist relocation and harassment by police in the mid-70s when you were living in your vehicle back then.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was, as you described, you know, downtown, an effort to move counterculture folk along, particularly if they had no money. And I was, in fact, one of the people involved at that time with organizing people to resist that effort, the effort to, as it was referred to at the time, to caramelize Santa Cruz. Among the proposals at that time, in fact, was the idea of moving to reducing the planter boxes. They saw that the planter boxes were a problem. People were sitting on the planter boxes and thereby hanging out all day. So they thought, well, maybe we should lower the planter boxes down to 6 inches, and that would help to facilitate getting people out of town. I pointed out to a number of them in meetings that we were the only ones who would sit on planter boxes that were 6 inches high. If they did that, they would get rid of everybody else, which I think has always, you know, been a part of the problem. When, you know, in the summertime when the downtown was bustling and everybody was there, and some of them were counterculture, and some of them were long-haired, some of them were broke, and some of them were, but at that time, you know, some of them were business people, some of them were college students, some of them were, come from all aspects of the community, some of them were tourists, and people were sitting around and hanging together and talking and swapping stories, and, you know, old people telling young people how it used to be in their day, and, you know, the kind of thing that people do around the well in the center of the village.
The planter boxes were removed, and what you have now is you have a few areas where there are planter areas, not many, like in front of the old, what was formerly the Cooper House, now across from the Cinema 9 Theater, there's a sort of a planter area, and there's another area up near, I guess it's the Bank of America, New Leaf area. But generally, the planters are gone. Instead, you have these benches, occasional benches that are placed. And this was all done without real public hearings, although they had the Vision Santa Cruz so-called input, in my mind, without real homeless input. But I guess let me try to return to, unless you wanted to conclude something you were saying, to the actual showdown in Mulligan's court that happened, I guess it was on Tuesday afternoon, March 4th.
And before I do, let me do back up so that you haven't recharacterized this. I do think it was a mistake for them to make an effort to chase people away because people just aren't going. That's not one of their choices. They should endeavor to create a mix of people downtown and ensure that it doesn't become anybody's turf. And I think removing the planter boxes was a mistake. They didn't remove the planter boxes as suggested. People resisted that. The progressive community resisted it. It was a silly idea. It didn't go over. The earthquake then called for wholesale changes downtown. When they decided to reconstruct, they did kind of halfway go. It looks to me like a compromise between what some people wanted, which was no place for folks to be hanging out, so they just like move. They should move around in the shopping area. And on the other hand, some benches and some sort of places to sit. A lot of people, maybe not. I think it was a mistake myself. Okay, now back to Chaz, or to, let me start off with Chaz. So this guy, funny little guy, makes fidgets, little toys, little finger occupying toys. He's been hanging out of the mall for a good while now, kind of surreptitiously selling them to the individuals. And he was sitting at some point. He's also kind of, in my opinion, a high-strung individual. He's been on the street since he was a youngin. Now he's got things more or less together. He's got business partners on his fidget toy. But anyway, he was hanging out. He had headphones on. He was sitting on the base that holds Tom Scribner's statue, the base being this block, which is just about a sitting height, and got just about enough room in front of Tom's statue itself that one would be encouraged to sit on it.
This is a statue of Tom actually playing his instrument, the musical saw, right?
This is Tom Scribner, who, yeah, as you say, lived in the St. George Hotel, became kind of a town character, well-beloved even in the 80s. He formerly a logger up in the Northwest, where he became involved in union organizing and political rabble-rousing. But in his retirement years, in his 80s, he came to Santa Cruz. He hung out at the St. George. He drank at Lulu Carpenter's, and everybody in town knew the look of him, and a number of people knew him individually. I was fortunately among those people. And Tom used to sit out on the mall and play his musical saw, something he taught himself back in the lumber fields, and have a cup out and accept donations for the purpose. And as a real more as a way to meet people, which he did quite a bit of.
Did he ever get ticketed, Tom, for the very ordinance which now has the same number and somewhat different scope? Actually, it's pretty much the same scope, which is 9.50.020, sitting on misconduct on public property, it's called. You know if he ever got a ticket for that?
Well, for sitting on the planter box?
Yeah, or sitting anywhere.
Now, people, in truth, Robert, to be... You know, I understand what you're trying to suggest, but...
No, I just wondered, that's all.
I know, but in fact, it was a rare event that people were ticketed for sitting on those planter boxes. There was a move for a little bit by the elder Leask and some of the guys at the old Dinner Cafe and some of the jewelers who were downtown, kind of running things at that time, to call for enforcement of that ordinance against people for sitting on the planter boxes. Nobody had envisioned it initially as an ordinance to get people off the planter boxes. They just started saying, why don't we move them along? Why don't you use everything in the book? What have we got? We got this thing that says they can't just hang around. Why don't we apply it? And it wasn't applied to Tom, and very rarely. There was a little attempt for a little while. The community responded against it. There wasn't a big move to ticket people for sitting on the planter boxes. It was a very popular activity partaken of by business people who were having their lunch, lawyers from the county building come, you know, Zocalis, get a sandwich and sit out next to some hippie and chat, you know. That was a normal thing on the mall. And there wasn't a big move against Tom or anyone else, even counterculture that.
Well, actually, from my experience, Tom, was a little bit different. I know at least 10 years later, in 1989, 90, 91, there were a significant number of tickets given out for sitting on the planter box. I know Linda Edwards got one. I got one. A woman next to her got one. People who were doing the homeless table would get harassed through this particular device. Now, I don't know. It certainly wasn't universal. But I don't know if I'd say it was as rare as you would. But anyway, we may disagree on this.
No, we're disagreeing now about time periods. You're asking me, did Tom get a ticket? No, nobody got a ticket back then when Tom was sitting out on those planter boxes. They didn't pass Tom up and give the tickets to others. They didn't give anybody tickets back. Well, there was an attempt in 77. The community came together as...
And it's true, I am
talking
about...
And then, as you say, later on, the political things changed, the activists took different tactics, the city took different tactics, and then there was another move at cleaning up the mall, as there have been periodically through the years that I've been in town, just in 77. So Shaz is sitting down on the base of the statue, and he's got his headphones on, and Officer Headley comes by.
This is your account from his account, right? From actually Chaz's own account, the way he described it, or...
I'm now relating the undisputed facts. I thought we would go back afterwards and start disputing, but
right.
The undisputed facts, this is the way Officer Headley presented it, this is the way Shaz presented it. Afterwards, perhaps we can go back and say, no, probably he was wrong.
The
other
these are the accounts from the two folks. You weren't there, neither was I. But
that's correct.
This is what they said.
In court, these were the undisputed facts.
Right.
Shaz was sitting there with the headphones on, the cop came along, that was Officer Headley, said... well, to Officer Headley, he said, from his account, he said, excuse me, could you do me a favor and not sit there? From Shaz's account, what he said was, that was meant to be dead air, indicating that he didn't hear him. he had his headphones on. And by both accounts, he then took off his headphones and said something that they both agreed was apparently Shaz said, you know, I didn't hear what you said. Now I'm open to communication. What have you got to say? The officer said he said it more rudely than that. But in either case, they were now talking to each other. And
they were talking at each other.
Yeah, apparently. And at that point, Shaz regarded the officer's approach as arrogant. The officer regarded Shaz's approach as arrogant. And the two of them disputed whether or not one could be... an officer has a right to move somebody off of that spot. And as a result, Shaz didn't go. And the ordinance requires a warning from the police officer before he tickets. They both agreed that first was a warning, and then came a ticket, which they both agree Shaz then ripped up and ate, or at least put into his mouth and chewed. So he chewed his ticket, and then in the end, he went into court, his argument being that in the ordinance, as I indicated earlier, there was a thing that was not specific to Tom Scribner's statue, but at least had indicated that, well, monuments were someplace that one didn't shouldn't sit. It was very specific as to that. Whether or not the base of this is a monument is unknown. But in either case, the extended part of the ordinance suggested that neither can you sit anywhere that is not designed for sitting or customarily used for that purpose. Herein lies the dispute. Is it customarily used? Do people generally sit on the base that holds Tom Scribner's statue? You, I believe, were the one that gave this guy my phone number and said that I might be a witness as to whether or not that space is customarily used.
I should mention at this point, Tom, that you've been involved at different points in the street performers' guidelines, which were designed in the late 70s, early 80s by you and other folks to provide an alternative to legal and police solutions on street performers.
Yeah, let's go back to that stuff. So Shaz called me up, yeah. Said, you know, I left a message on my machine telling me what time he was going to be in court. Mm-hmm. He called me on the day of the thing. I went there, and I testified in his case solely to the effect that, yes, people generally have used that as a sitting place, starting with Tom Scribner himself, who was alive when the statue was commissioned. And Tom used to say that he's going to go and sit down next to that statue and see which one the pigeons shit on first.
Mm-hmm.
And so I testified to that effect in court. I think I said poop instead of shit. Mm-hmm. And then I indicated that Tom had used a different word. Then Shaz presented his case in court. He did it in a very excited manner. He did what I think is often a mistake. He made a big point out of all kinds of extraneous little points. I think he would have been smarter and would have served his cause better and our cause, really, had he just stuck with the question of whether or not Tom Scribner's statue or the base below it is one of the places that's customarily used for sitting on the mall. But as it was, the judge, I think, was... He made it easier for the judge to disregard the legal question and instead to address the personalities involved. I think the judge got a reading that this was a cop trying to do a difficult job and a guy who was just being a creep and arrogant and needed some kind of, you know, anyway, the judge decided he ought to support the cop in this situation.
Did the judge specify, Tom, whether he bought Officer Headley's argument that the code section in question has two parts? One, is a place customarily designed? Or two, is it specifically specified? Apparently, Headley made the argument that it's not just, you can't simply defend against yourself by saying, oh, people customarily sit here, but there are certain items such as, oh, I don't know, drinking fountains and water boxes that are specified and presumably can't be used under this law for sitting purposes, even if customarily designed, customarily used for that purpose. You remember what Referee Mulligan's final decision was around that?
Well, he didn't make any final. He all he did was find guilty. He didn't have any legal reasoning behind it. I don't think he was going by Headley's legal argument either. I don't think Headley had a cogent legal argument. I don't agree that you suggested that he was making some kind of distinction like that. I think that Headley was trying to suggest. They both got detoured into this thing where he was trying to say that Headley was trying to say, yes, but monument is one of those things named, and so is in the body of the excluded areas and should not be regarded as the and, you know, or excluding areas that are customarily used. He was just saying this is monument is already named. This is one of the places you cannot be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
But so that distinction was not cleared up by Mulligan one way or the other.
No, of course the response to it was that the base of the statue is not the monument.
So even had Headley been correct and that the monument was an excluded area, the base was not specified, and indeed the base was customarily used by, I think that the...
I think that was the legal argument that it would have been interesting to have it addressed.
So perhaps you and I should go sit there and see what they do.
You and I, there would be a case.
actually, I think that, you know...
Argue about how to argue the case together.
Well, Chaz, you know, had
Chaz, actually, S-H-A-Z.
I'm sorry, Chaz had documentation of different sorts. He had I think he had letters, at least from one owner across the street, a letter from the flower shop indicating that they had seen people customarily sit there, a letter from an employee of the bookshop. I think he actually had letters from people who specified that they, longtime residents of town or workers in the area, had actually themselves sat there customarily. And I was prepared to testify that in the course of protest demonstrations, I not only sat there, I stood there with police officers present, with actual photographs of police officers present, and received no ticket. Although, you know, and the protests involved this statue were, there were several issues. I think one issue, as you point out, was a very simple question, was the base of the statue customarily used for sitting? And there was no evidence that it wasn't. I don't think Officer Headley or anybody else presented evidence that it wasn't. The second issue, which was not really raised in a direct and systematic way, but then later, I guess, got raised sort of sporadically by Chaz, was the issue of selective enforcement. Maybe you'd like to talk about that a little bit. Maybe not.
Well, no, I could talk about selective enforcement.
What is selective enforcement, Tom?
Selective enforcement would be, in this case, let's put it in this situation. Let's say that the policeman regularly goes down the street and regularly sees people sitting there on that spot or some other, and then just when he came by at some point and saw that this one was in fact counterculture type, and he came over and tried to enforce it, only in those situations, ignoring it in others. This was the kind of selective enforcement that some people were alleging was in fact at the center of the case here.
And indeed, I was one of those so alleging. And it's interesting to see the difference in perspectives between myself and Tom on this issue. I stayed for much of the trial, but then had to hustle off to the study session on homelessness, which was also happening that Tuesday afternoon on March 4th. As I said, Chaz lost and then contacted me later and told me he was going to appeal when he came back, or at least consider an appeal. And I guess the case is not finished. Although, if you're going to be doing an appeal, it's really important to get certain facts on the record. Consideration that's going to become important in the upcoming sleep crime trials after the sleep crime chain gang lockdown case comes back to the court with the verdict on Monday or Tuesday. There's going to be a number of cases, including Pat Ring, Sandy Roth, Mooncat, Daniel Hopkins cases, and then, of course, the ongoing cases of people who are getting caught up in the sleeping band dragnet. I'm really hoping that we can find in our community some way to get together a sort of a legal clinic approach to at least understanding how to defend ourselves against some of these charges that commonly come up instead of, and do so with a certain amount of solidarity with each other, understanding that our cases will have impact on other cases and that we don't have to trailblaze alone, that indeed many of these things have been brought to court before. In the late 80s and the early 90s, there was a flood of sleeping band protest tickets to hit the court, many of them defended by attorney Grinning Ray Gruneich, who's now no longer an attorney, but still an acute legal mind, who's occasionally in town and able to provide a certain amount of help. A lot of times the factional differences between activists, personality differences, a determination to do your own thing, leads people into a position where they kind of don't rely on at least hearing the experiences of those of us who've been through this stuff before, and I think that's a real mistake. Of course, there's also the problem that there's no central place where all this information can easily be found, and if anybody out there listening to this tape is interested in working on a sleeping band project to update and put together a brief packet on how to deal with sleeping band cases and how to deal with sitting on the sidewalk cases and how to deal with unreasonable noise, the statute used to harass Skidmark Bob Duran, for instance, by the Alibaba kiosk, Alibaba, give me a call at 423-4833 and maybe we can get some folks together to start working on this. We need to do it. Cases are still coming out of the City Hall sleepers protest from last year, the 7.5-month vigil in front of City Hall. So let's look to that and see if we can not have to reinvent the wheel every time another case comes up and actually have a set of guidelines that not only those of us who are politically active can use, but also those of us who are simply... Those of us who are simply trying to sleep.
That we can use as well.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides for mid-March, hopefully being broadcast on March 16th after being recorded on March 15th, 1997. Now a brief comic musical interlude.
Trouble continued to brew. It was a time for action and a time for words. On a hot July night in 1776, Benjamin Franklin was aroused from his work by the call of destiny.
Hey, get in there, Ben. Who's that, Sylvia?
The call of destiny.
Come on, take a look through the curtain.
Tom Jefferson.
What, again? Well, it's no good. I'll have to let him in. For the weekend.
Well, there's only Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned.
What has that got to do with anything, Franklin?
I don't know. It's the first thing came into my head. I was just making conversation. An idle brain is the devil's playground, you know.
So you're pretty good at that, aren't you?
Yeah, there's some new wise sayings I just made up.
Wise sayings?
I call them wise sayings. What can I do for you?
Well, I got this petition here. I've been circulating around the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
Kind of thought you'd like to sign it. Call the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I heard about that. Sounds a little suspect, if you ask me.
What do you mean, suspect?
Well, you're advocating the overthrow of the British government by force and violence, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but we've had it with that royal jazz. Well,
who's we?
All the guys.
Who's all the guys?
Oh, George, Jim Madison, Alex Hamilton, Johnny Adams, you know, all the guys.
Ha! The lunatic fringe.
Oh, they are.
Bunch of wild-eyed radicals. Professional liberals, don't kid me, Ann.
Oh, you call George Washington a wild-eyed radical?
Washington? I don't see his name on there.
No, but he promised to sign it.
Oh, yeah, that's George for you. Talks up a storm with them wooden teeth. Can't shut him off. When it comes time to put the name on the old parchment of Rooney, try and find him.
What are you so surly about today?
Surly to bed and surly to rise.
Oh,
makes
all right,
a man...
All right, let's knock off the one-line jokes and sign the petition. What do you say, huh?
Well, let me skim down it here. within the course of human events, so, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That's pursuit of happiness.
Well, all your S's look like F's here.
Oh, it's stylish.
Oh, I see.
It's in. It's very in.
Oh, well, if it's in. Therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, solemnly publish and declare that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and so on. A little overboard, isn't it?
Well,
you write this?
Yeah, I know. Right.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, why don't you leave it with me and I'll mail it in, huh?
Come on.
No, I tell you, Tom, let me say this, I'm with you in spirit. I'm sure you understand that, but, you know, I gotta play it conservative. I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
I got the printing business going pretty good. Almanac made Book of the Month. And then I got the inventions, you know. Got pretty good distribution on the stoves now. And, of course, every Saturday evening, I bring out the mag.
The what?
Magazine.
Oh. Well, that reminds me, that artist I sent by, did you look at his stuff?
You mean the Rockwell boy? Skinny kid with the pipe?
Yeah, that's a kid.
Yeah, I glanced at it. And he's too far out for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know you got to play it safe.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But getting back to the signing of the petition, how about it, huh?
Well,
it's a harmless thing.
Oh, sure, harmless. I know how these things happen. You go to a couple of harmless parties, sign a harmless petition, forget all about it. 10 years later, you get hauled up before a committee. No, thank you. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life writing in Europe.
Oh, come on.
Come on what?
Come on and put your name on the dotted line.
I got to be particular what I sign.
It's just a piece of paper.
Just a piece of paper, that's what you say.
Come on and put your signature on the list.
It looks to have a very subversive twist.
How silly to assume it. Won't you non-deplume it today? You're so skittish. Who possibly could care if you do?
The un-British Activities Committee. That's who.
Let's have a little drinko and fill the quill.
It sounds a little pinko to me, but still.
Knock off the timid manner if you want a banner to raise.
Banner to raise.
You must take.
I must take.
A stand.
A stand.
For this brave.
For this brave.
New land.
New land.
Who wants to live.
To live.
So concerned.
So concerned.
But if.
But if. I don't dis.
He don't dis.
Agree.
Agree.
But a man can't be too careful what he signs these days. Well, if I sign it, will you renew your subscription?
Yeah, if you promise not to keep throwing it on the rug.
Well, my...
It isn't on the rug, it's in the rose bushes or in the mud.
My eyesight isn't what it used to be, you know. Besides, it's hard to hit the porch from a horse.
Now, come on, all we want to do is hold a few truths to be self-evident.
You're sure it's not going to start a revolution or anything?
Trust me.
Okay, give it to me. You got a quill on you?
Here you go.
Look at that show-off Hancock, will you? Pretty flamboyant signature for an insurance man.
Ah, you did a good thing, Ben. You won't be sorry. Now, if I can just get another 3 or 4 guys, we'll be all set.
Well, I tell you one thing.
What's that?
You better get them to sign it in the next couple of days before they all take off for the 4th of July weekend.
It's about 10 to 3 on March 8th, 1997. We're here on the Mall, right in front of the free radio table across from Woolworths, and we're talking to...
Alex?
Alex, you just took a flyer, Women's Day Fades Soon Tonight, where sleep is not a human right. Have you had problems being able to sleep at night?
Oh, yeah, man. It's like, I was just thinking about this a couple days ago, like, me and my girlfriend, I was, like, sleeping in the van, and she was just reading a book. Cop comes up, starts chatting on what she does, and, like, how she gets around and where she's going, and then all of a sudden decides that she needs to get out of the van and be searched, then opens up our van, you know, and opens it up, gets me out, searches me. I'm like, what's the problem, officer? He didn't even tell me, just got me out of the van.
The name of the officer did this?
No, I don't.
Orange County Sheriff's Department.
So you guys are relatively new in town.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz,
yeah.
Any problems locally?
Not yet.
How long have you been here?
A few days. We kind of, like, keep our eyes open for a good spot, so, you know, it's like, I don't understand that. It's illegal to sleep. Like, what harm could you be doing to sleep? Like, all you're doing is sleeping.
Well, you might have bad dreams. They have to protect you from that.
Yeah.
So if you have any further problems, you two, particularly here, let me know. My number's at the bottom of the flyer.
On March 10th, the Palo Alto City Council surprised no one by voting 7-2 in favor of a sit-lie ban on University Avenue area 10 block long in downtown Palo Alto. The law will be again up for a vote on March 24th at their 7 p.m. City Council meeting. And if anyone's interested in attending that City Council meeting, give me a call at 423-HUFF. We may be trying to take a convoy of people down there if enough people are interested. This is a law that is modeled after similarly discredited laws in Seattle, Berkeley, and Santa Cruz, but rejected in San Francisco and in Oakland, I think. I'm not sure about Oakland. Which make it illegal for people to sit down on the sidewalk even if they're not blocking traffic. In Palo Alto, the situation was particularly ludicrous because the city had attempted to pass such a law last summer and been met with an onslaught of testimony against it, including a number of their own commissions. So they put it off until January, and then they reconvened a hearing on the law, and they tried to get the police to testify that there was a tripping problem. That is to say that ordinary citizens, because of the congestion of traffic on the sidewalk in University Avenue area downtown Palo Alto, would stumble over people sitting down. However, their own police department could not adduce one case of an individual who'd actually suffered this, one claim against the city, or even one complaint around this whole thing. And other people testified that the downtown obstacles to traffic were mainly things like chairs and tables, which the city was giving a license to yuppie businesses to put out on the sidewalk. The point being, of course, that the city is afraid to pass a no-panhandling law, perhaps because of its vulnerability to court challenges, though there is a current very right-wing sentiment in the courts, and they hold that if you allow for people to solicit at certain times, places, and in certain manners, you can bar it in virtually all other circumstances. Santa Cruz, for instance, has a complete ban on nighttime spare changing or asking for food, and it bans it in a number of other circumstances, such as in and out of cars, within, I think it's within 50 feet of an ATM, although maybe sitting within 50 feet of an ATM. In any case, they could have gone after a panhandling law, which would have been more honest, although no less objectionable because of its content. But here they decided they would, because Palo Alto, ironically, even though it's a much more vigorous economic community than Santa Cruz, and it's been growing at a faster rate as a denser population, it's more liberal. And at least that was my sense from the people who came to the meetings, both on January, the one I attended then, and in this most recent meeting in March. The first speaker was a guy, an attorney, who tried to get on the agenda to speak about the issue, and he was told the agenda was closed. In fact, they had taken a whole bunch of names in January and then held the hearings over until March so they could allow people to conclude their testimony, and they had closed the hearings. And I suppose in a way that was fair. It's certainly fairer than our own city council in Santa Cruz, which has a much more limited period of oral testimony and rarely extends hearings at the request of the public or because there are more people who want to speak than they at that particular session have time for. So what he did, this attorney, he attempted to speak at oral communications. And they first tried to shut him up by saying, you've got to talk about something that's not on the agenda. He said, well, it's on the agenda, but you won't let me talk about it during that period of time. And he finally waltzed his way around this. And he had some interesting things to say, and we're going to hear from several speakers at the Palo Alto City Council hearing on the sit-lie law.
The hearing was closed unless my council members choose to reopen.
Thank you.
Honorable
council members, I think in deciding whether to pass a specific proposal into law, apply minimum standards. Guided by
you're speaking to an agenda item that we have, that your public hearing is closed. So if you want to speak generally to an issue, that's fine. We're
Could you say what you're
I'm going to suggest a three-part test to apply when evaluating any agenda, any proposal. Guided by the concept that we should not shame ourselves and that we should be proceeding reasonably. The first test we should apply the dog The many people who have had occasion to chase my dog, Rosie, including myself, can answer that question. If Rosie were to listen, we said sit, and sit. good dog person. Did not say you're under arrest. That's one example of how to apply the test. The second test I suggest you apply is when you present the rationale, the supposed rationale, for a proposed law, do the majority of people respond, give me a break? I don't think it requires anything. And the third test that I suggest that we apply is, would the exact opposite law better serve our true purposes? For example, if we told people, you can only beg from a sitting or lying position, would the people in this community have their concerns and safety better served? I think that those standards are required for Palo Alto not to be a laggard in the civilized world. But I think we can hold our city to a much higher standard. I think we are a beacon of light to much of this country. I think that there is presently and regrettably an epidemic of cruelty in this country. And we have done many things here, showing compassion. Those don't get national press. And my concern is that we will lead the way in punishing rich folks instead of lead the way in showing the light.
I've never done this before. I have been a resident of Palo Alto for 28 years. I raised my four children here, and because of the schools and all the advantages for children, we were poor. What happened? Okay, so then I went away for a while, and then I came back 2 years ago. And since then, it's been very, very hard for me. I really didn't know that it was like this anymore. I got a room at the Barker, and then I was asked to leave, not evicted, but just asked to leave. Why, I said. And they said, because you had a man in your room all night. I had a friend in my room all night because I was so upset by then that I needed to be with him. Okay, so I'm out of there. Now what? Well, I had to be homeless for 3 months, and I did not like it. Okay, I liked nothing about it except the air. It changed me. And finally, I got my thing together enough to rent a room. Oh, I should have said this in the beginning. 425 High Street, Palo Alto Hotel. Okay, so I got a room in there. I went to Miramonte. I tried to do everything right. But there was a problem. The hotel charges about $725 a month. My check that comes in direct deposit is $708. That is after they have raised it for once in 6 years by $14. Almost the same day, the hotel raises rent $30. So, I'm now stuck. This is an appeal for housing, but I just thought I'd let you know that I can't live in there. I was going to the Alliance, used to be Miramonte, for job rehab. Well, so I come back in my room and my teeth are gone, my brand new beautiful plastic teeth, and my $60 that was in there for me. Okay, so here I am now. It's not funny, and I guess the only hope I have right now is thinking of going down to, well, I took the money out of the bank, right? Anyway, have the money, that's why I've been sitting out there.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly.
Mayor, members of the City Council, my name is Kira Kazanzis. I'm the directing attorney at Mental Health Advocacy Project, which is a free legal and advocacy service for people with mental health and developmental disabilities. And I'm here on behalf of Palo Alto residents and visitors with mental health or developmental disabilities to speak in opposition to the proposed sit-lie ordinance. First, this ordinance that seems designed, or at least will have the effect to move the homeless from Palo Alto sidewalks, will disproportionately and negatively affect my clients. Over the past year, over 2 million men, women, and children were homeless, and even more Americans than that are at risk of homelessness. Nationwide, individuals with mental health disabilities are disproportionately represented among the homeless. It's estimated that approximately a third of the homeless have mental health or developmental disabilities. A number of things contribute to the increased risk of homelessness for people with disabilities, including the problem of paying rent on a fixed income, as we heard before, the difficulty in acquiring disability benefits in the first place, the discrimination in housing, and the loss of housing that some people experience while they are hospitalized or ill. The Adult Services Division of the Department of Mental Health in Santa Clara County has reported that there is a desperate need for more supportive housing in the North County area. The median rent in the area is $739. That's in Santa Clara County, 25% more than the monthly federal disability benefit amount. At the same time as we face an affordable housing crisis in Palo Alto and the rest of Santa Clara County, support services for my clients have diminished greatly in the last 3 years alone. I'm sure you're aware, $30 million cut in mental health. Second, the way to address the social and economic problems of homelessness is not to sweep the problem out of the way, but to attack and address the underlying problems. These are social and economic problems. As you know, we face a severe shortage in Santa Clara County and Palo Alto as for permanent and emergency beds. I think there was an estimate in the Mercury this morning, 15 beds for 150 homeless folks. The resources that we're going to put towards enforcement of this ordinance and defending this ordinance could be better put to many things, among which are day programming, job training, extra beds, extra hours at shelters. And third, and this issue also presents itself for my clients who may not be homeless, I'm also concerned about the individuals who have disabilities and or who may be medicated and may therefore be unable to comply immediately with an order of the police to move away. I'm concerned that a failure to address this issue in the ordinance could escalate a conflict situation that may lead to some of my clients being unnecessarily hospitalized or incarcerated. I'd just like to last ask you to imagine that you are in the shoes of a homeless person with a disability. If you're lucky enough to find an available shelter bed last night, you were asked to leave at 6 a.m., and you were told not to return until the evening. You're tired from the sedating effects of psychiatric medication, and you have no place to rest your feet. You have no money for a restaurant, so you can't go in a restaurant. You're told you smell, so you're kicked out of the local library. If you find an out-of-the-place way to sit, you're an easy prey to assault or robbery of the meager possessions that you might carry with you. Wouldn't you look for a public and safe place that you could be in the company of other people facing the same problems that you're experiencing? What will you do when a police officer tells you that you are not even allowed to sit on a public sidewalk? Please consider the impact on my clients before you decide to okay this ordinance. Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Carl McConnell. I live at 3775 Wright Place. I'm an attorney, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Mental Health Advocacy Project, which I represent. I want to start off by thanking all of those that I spoke with of this council for your courtesy and time. I appreciate the fact that you all were willing to meet with me and discuss what has been a controversial issue. As you know from Kira's comments, the project is opposed to the proposed ordinance. I've submitted previously several letters outlining our comments. I'm going to quickly touch on 5 points. We feel that the proposed ordinance is simply unreasonable. It's supposedly a public safety measure, but the way that it's drafted, it affects not only the zone where pedestrian traffic occurs, which is roughly the 6-foot area in front of the storefronts, as noted by the city attorney at the last session. It also applies to any other area of the sidewalk. It simply is unreasonable. Secondly, the ordinance is overbroad. It applies to people who have no intent to obstruct, who aren't obstructing in fact. And as Kara has indicated, it includes people who may have no ability to understand or comprehend commands. Thirdly, the ordinance is unnecessary. Existing state law specifically prohibits intentional obstruction of the sidewalk. There's no need for this ordinance. Indeed, while all of this debate has been going on, the police department has seen fit to provide additional police presence in the downtown area. And I think all of you know that the effect of that has been to basically cure the problems that people perceive to justify this ordinance. The ordinance raises First Amendment issues, particularly because of its overbreadth and exceeding where a reasonable ordinance would reach to deal with genuine safety issues. Finally, the ordinance comes out of, at least in my eyes, a concern for aggressive panhandling, for assaultive behavior, for types of conduct which are not appropriate, but the ordinance that's before us is not going to address those matters at all. It is not going to serve the purpose that it is purported to serve, and it's simply going to cause mischief. If there must be some form of sit-lie ordinance, the letter that I've submitted to the council this evening outlines some proposed changes in the context of the existing draft language. And very quickly, those provisions would be changed as follows. The ordinance would define a 6-foot-wide zone in front of the storefronts where the ordinance would be applicable. It would not be otherwise applicable to the sidewalk area. Secondly, the hours that the ordinance would be operative would be reduced to the noontime and the dinnertime hours, the peak traffic hours, pedestrian traffic. Thirdly, specific categories of additional circumstances when the ordinance would not apply would be recognized. Those would include any person who is, in fact, not obstructing, any person who does not have the intent to obstruct, and any person who, for reasons of mental disability, cognitive impairment, or other similar problems, is unable to conform their conduct to instructions and directions from a police officer. We would ask that the ordinance be sunset. I suggest the date of 11/1/97. My theory being that it's the summer months when there's going to be a peak need, if there is a need. The ordinance would then sunset by its own provisions. You would ask and direct in this ordinance, if you approve it in the modified form, that the police department submit periodic incident reports, I would think on a monthly basis, so that you'll have a database in the event that there is a perceived need to reintroduce a similar measure in the future. We can have this debate against a factual context, which might help determine whether or not there is genuinely a problem that can be addressed successfully by this ordinance. Thank you again for your time.
The attorney you just heard speak is actually still pressing for these amendments, though the council has denied them and actually passed the original sit-lie ordinance, which, as I said before, is something that, unlike the Santa Cruz ordinance, well, actually similar to the original Santa Cruz ordinance, bars sitting or lying, period, in the 10-block area of University Avenue. Our Santa Cruz ordinance bars lying everywhere up and down the street. Our Santa Cruz ordinance also bars sitting within 10 feet of a shop or 50 feet of an ATM or 4 feet of a drinking fountain or telephone. This ordinance is designed to remove homeless people from sight. And the Palo Alto community, at least those who came to that meeting, most of them are really very angry at the council for doing this, or trying to do this. There's a real chance there may be some significant protest against it, and I've encouraged the Palo Alto people to begin petitioning on the streets to, let's say, make as a reasonable alternative, pass the amendments that Mr. McConnell here suggested, the attorney, and then when the council refuses to do that, to protest that ordinance in a vivid CD-ish kind of way, and perhaps they'll do that. If you're interested in supporting such a protest, do give me a call at 423-4833, and I'll put you in touch with the Palo Alto folks. Again, on March 24th, there will be another meeting of the City Council. If it passes the ordinance in a second reading, it will go into effect on April 24th or thereabouts.
Mayor Huber and members of the Council, my name is Reverend Giroux, and I live at 2200 Byron Street in Palo Alto. And although I don't come as a representative of any particular group, the fact that I'm in the 77th year of my age suggests that I belong to what has been called, I believe, the senior community in this city. One reads in the papers almost every day that this is a time of prosperity for our country. That prosperity, however, has clearly not been shared by all. Many in our society are unemployed or homeless, and many working people live in poverty, insecurity, and fear, the fear of losing their homes and of joining the homeless and being on the streets like the people who are there already. Yearly, the gap between rich and poor grows wider as more people lose their jobs, often for the sake of bigger dividends and bonuses, although those changes are undertaken in the name of efficiency. Obviously, even upscale Palo Alto has had its share of victims of this widespread economic distress, and their presence in our streets is and should be very troubling, but not as a cosmetic flaw in the city's appearance. It should be troubling because these people need help. It seems to me that to attempt to legislate the problem away by making needy people invisible evades the issue rather than confronting it. To seek to make it a crime for poor people to manifest themselves in public during business hours is an abdication of the community's responsibility to devise rational and humane ways of addressing the situation. Homeless people need housing and food. The unemployed need jobs. Some undoubtedly could profit from employment counseling, and some are surely in need of psychiatric assistance, even though it seems to me that that does not really attack the root of the problem. But clearly, what people in distress need is help and not to be chased off the streets. Unemployment and homelessness are not crimes, and the police should not be held responsible for dealing with them. This is a national problem, and sadly has met with little more than token rhetoric from our elected leaders in Washington and Sacramento. I recognize that it should not be the unique burden of city government, or for that matter of churches or individual philanthropists, to promote the general welfare. National and state officials ought to face up to the realities of the issue. But until they do, cities like Palo Alto should not resort to the false solution of criminalizing neediness. This is a city rich in material resources, and I think rich in spiritual ones as well. It seems to me that it's high time to begin putting those resources to work. Thank you.
I wish we had more time for that, but I want to squeeze in some of our own city council's activities. Our city council meets every second and fourth Tuesday at a 3:30 and then again at a 7 o'clock meeting. And David Minton Silva, Green Party candidate who ran for city council last fall and has been a supporter of ending the sleeping ban and more reasonable and compassionate laws for homeless people and more compassionate priorities for our city council, has been regularly looking over the agenda of each city council meeting and coming to discuss those items on the agenda that many of us would not know are significant but actually are, because in funding one thing, you are denying funding for another, and Silva is trying to cut through to the fat and show where the bullshit is hidden. Anyway, he speaks here at Oral Communications, followed by me, and then followed by a long response from Councilmember Scott Kennedy. I find Kennedy's response particularly interesting, and we'll comment on it after he's given it. But here, let's let the speakers speak for themselves.
My name is David Silva, 809A Riverside Avenue, Santa Cruz, California. First, I'd like to thank you for Portuguese Immigrant Week. If you want to learn how to solve some problems, talk to a Portuguese immigrant. Also, thank you.
For those who wonder what he's talking about, there was a resolution to that effect.
And I'm sorry I missed your afternoon session, so I don't know how item 6 or item 10 went. Item 6, I hope there was enough opening so there could be possibly a leeway for a homeless campground underneath the campground considerations. And item 10, I want to congratulate you for having a union company come in to build the SoCal Bridge. On the police pie chart, those members that were considered, that portion was considered protesters. It'd be nice if the police could provide us also information with if those protesters, what part of town they came from, if it was from the east side mostly or not. Okay, I have a prepared statement I'll try to read as fast as possible. I'm here to compliment you on your efforts to bring the community together and to hold a forum for mutual education as you did last week. I'm only sorry that I was overcome by a cold and could not participate. What I would have said is still applicable and to that continuing process and the related process of mutual education regarding housing, which is scheduled for next week. I am with you in the spirit of shared study and to make sure we all hear that this special kind of community building, this cooperative learning, is not to be filled with all of our prejudices and biases, nor even our righteous indignations. This is a great opportunity to set aside the outrages and the chanting on the same indictments of each other. Such a great relief for each of us as we let go of past mistakes, ours and so each other's. Errors are the givens as we review where we are in this problem. Actually, the problem is an old one. The current system has a particular shape made from attempted solutions to parts of the problem, and they have assembled into a maddening maze inhabited by entities that speak languages unknown to each other. The commerce of ideas requires that we all act as translators for each other. We all know too well the madness and the impending doom. We seldom know the details of the accomplishments of each other's endeavors, and we seem little inclined to give credit to each other. This is wrong. It is indicative of a greater challenge. The challenge to treat each other with civility when we speak of the plight of the homeless is a challenge to bring virtues to the discourse and practice them with each other. Two virtues I would care to mention is patience and hustling. Patience and the sense of urgency that gives us the grace to know when to hustle. Hustle is a virtue of timing. Patience loses its stature as a virtue if it lacks compassion, losing it perhaps to benevolent arrogance. The sense of hustle loses its virtue if it shows no respect for patience, which allows for the communal spirit to create solutions. There is much to say. We need to be excellent with each other, practicing our virtues for each other, in order that we all hear the cries of those we seek to serve, and so that we all see well the disaster before us as a nation and a city. And I'd like to give this to the clerk. Also, I'd like to invite the council and the public to something called Spring Forward. It's April 5th and 6th at San Jose State. It's an affair. There'll be Dolores Huerta there, Ted Smith from Silicon Valley Toxics Project, founders of the Green Party, founders of the Labor Party, and it'll be a very educational program at San Jose State, April 5th and 6th. And also like to invite you to the Green Party convention, April 15th and 16th in San Jose State. And I have a statement from Mumia Abu-Jamal regarding Judy Berry. And I'd like to give it to
you. You got a lot in your 3 minutes.
Council members, my name is Robert Norris. Opening statements began today for Brandy Burgoyne, Jim Costner, Joel Coates, Daniel Hopkins, Lucas Stickney, Sean Nichols, and Sandy Roth in the first jury trial of last year's sleep crime demonstrations. Tens of thousands of dollars are being spent on these trials to punish these seven activists for bringing into public view what you don't want the public to see, don't want the public to know, don't want the public to respond to, and don't want the public to challenge you for. Your failure today to deal humanely with the reality of homeless people who have no legal place to sleep at night. Your failure to respond to a decade of protest and change the sleeping ban. You council members, the audience here tonight, and the viewing public may remember them from last September 10th. On that date, Jim Costner tried to present you with 1,000 signatures gathered downtown asking for a reform of the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban. Costner was tackled and his petition sent flying. They were picked up by Green Party candidate David Silva, who just spoke, who delivered them to the city clerk. That was shortly before Silva was hurtled out the door into a stone pillar, compliments of your sergeant, Andy Crane. A lawsuit in that case is still pending, I understand. We, the taxpayers, as usual, will pay the bills. Seven people chained themselves then to the furniture and the fixtures here. Seven people locked themselves down and went to jail because you refused to act on elementary arithmetic. Less than 40 sleeping spaces, legal sleeping spaces, for more than 750 homeless people, and a law that makes sleeping and covering up with blankets a crime. These facts are admitted by the last mayor, Mr. Rotkin, not disputed by the present mayor, Ms. Matthews, and generally acknowledged by last week's study session on homelessness. Now, council members have often been critical of us for attacking their unwillingness to address these basic civil rights issues. We are blamed for being negative. Perhaps they can suggest some positive thoughts if they can refrain from shuffling papers while the public is speaking, of course. Perhaps they can suggest some positive thoughts that homeless people can keep in their minds as they hide in the bushes, miss their court dates, get picked up on warrants, and shuffle into the prisoner's docks in the morning in orange jumpsuits for sentencing. That does happen daily in the courts. The
code violation is 6.36.010. I invite each of you to come down to court some morning and read over the court dockets to learn that I'm not just telling you stories. I do not refer to last week's study session on homelessness yet because I've not yet seen anything positive come out of it. I do commend Councilmember Kennedy, in spite of his fascination with papers while I'm talking, for putting together that session. And I hope that Michael Hernandez will publicly work on the emergency campground that he supported during the election campaign and again at the study session. Okay, finishing up, I invite you to come down to the public trial at Judge Yount's courtroom tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. and to hear Councilmember Rotkin on Friday at 1:30 p.m. testify in the Dan Hopkins case. Thank you.
I'd just like to point out that Mr. Norris typically gives us his statements, which usually are even longer in writing than they are spoken. And I'm actually a much better visual learner than audio learner, so I read his comments and find them redundant when he restates them in person. He asked what could be done to be constructive in the debate about homelessness. I think what would be very helpful would be to round out the discussions. This council has been very open about both the tremendous needs of homeless people in the community and what we can do and are doing to try to address those needs. I think the terms like big lie and so on are thrown around pretty readily in this community. What we do know is that there's a tremendous discrepancy about the number of emergency beds in our community and the number of homeless people in our community. And there's no real alignment of those two things. And I don't think there's a council member who would ever argue that there are sufficient emergency shelter beds in Santa Cruz to house all the homeless people in the city or county should they seek shelter. What we do know is this, is that the city of Santa Cruz does support emergency shelter in a variety of forms. Other cities in the county are not nearly as generous or consistent in providing emergency shelter. Neither do we get as much help from the state or federal governments as would make it possible for us to provide emergency shelter for everybody. But we do know this, that every person, with the exception of maybe two or three nights in the last two or three years, every single person who sought emergency shelter in the city of Santa Cruz was provided shelter.
That is not true.
Those who were not were people who had, for example, dogs and felt that they couldn't go to shelter without dogs, people who were inebriated and unable or unwilling to abide by the rules of the shelter programs. Those people, of course, could go home with individuals or others, but the rules, all the programs that provide emergency shelter do in fact have guidelines that are absolutely necessary.
It's sad that Celia Scott and Catherine Byers did not correct Kennedy on this misstatement. Perhaps they will at a future meeting. The problem is not unruly homeless people. The problem is lack of shelter space and a crazy law that criminalizes sleep.
Behavior, their history, and so on. So, you know, there are a lot of things we can disagree about. I just want to address that point about the question of shelter beds, because when somebody stands, not just the public microphone, but really takes advantage of the public microphone to address hundreds or maybe even thousands of people watching this on television, it's really not fair to make the representation that the only city in the county that's providing this kind of numbers of emergency shelter is somehow failing to accept our responsibility. We, as council members, I as an individual council member, get a lot of support from the voters and the taxpayers of this community who say, we want you to help those people who, by circumstance or bad luck, are on the streets or need shelter. But people who absolutely refuse to abide by any of the guidelines of the different shelter programs, frankly, they're wearing out their welcome.
He's actually referring to the great majority of homeless people, not that they won't abide by guidelines, but there are no shelter programs that exist during the spring, summer, and fall. He knows this, and yet he falsifies the facts here, or else in his eagerness to counter the speech I just made, ignores them. Instead, he attempts to scapegoat people, demonstrators, protesters, those who won't follow the guidelines. This is not the way to go, Scott.
Sentences, because they were assured by all the sidewalk constitutional lawyers that the sleeping ban is unconstitutional, they aren't going to be convicted. One gentleman, I believe he's here tonight, got $1,800 in fines, $75 a pop for multiple, you can do the math, citations he received. We received information from the Santa Cruz City Police Department If you take the number of people cited for the so-called camping ban in the city of Santa Cruz for the last 18 months, there have been, on average, 5 people a month cited.
This figure contradicts the police department's own figures, which we believe are low anyway. It also contradicts the court records if you go to court. In fact, there have been over 300 to 400 citations in the last couple of years. And, of course, this includes people at the City Hall protest. Many of them were at the protest because they had no other legal place to be, as well as the fact they were challenging the law. He is citing the case of Robert Flory, who did indeed face $75 a pop for tickets in Barton's court. Or perhaps it was $85 a pop. This is an issue of principle. He was well aware that the law was likely to be found constitutional. He's willing to fight it in spite of that. Kennedy misstates Flory's position. Kennedy misstates the position of other activists.
But it's really important because statements are made over and over and over again. We get letters, we get phone messages that lead me to believe that people actually fall for a lot of this nonsense because it's not contested. And I would just ask you, do 5 citations a month represent a horrific imposition of the camping ban, so-called, on the people of Santa Cruz County? I don't think so. And I'm going to ask the mayor to acknowledge that Mr. Norris has repeatedly publicly spoken out, and he should be removed from the council if he continues to do that.
I will.
Much time here. Kennedy sounds like a miniature Rodkin. In spite of the March 4th study session, he is not acknowledging that people are in an illegal status 9 months of the year, at the very least, if you want to consider the armory some kind of adequate shelter. It's not true that 2 or 3 people in the last 2 or 3 years have not had shelter space. It's true every night during the summer. It's also not true that 5 camping tickets a month are issued. These are inaccuracies or falsehoods that Kennedy should know better about. Perhaps he simply misspoke himself. Perhaps he's simply being defensive. We must remind ourselves as a man who said he opposed the entire camping ban, not just the sleeping ban, when he spoke to demonstrators in 1994 and again in 1996. He voted for the injunction against the sleepers at City Hall, an injunction which is still in force, and against which it's being charged against 2 individuals who face up to 6 months in jail, Sandy Roth and Pat Ring. He convened the City Council study session on March 4th, but as of yet, nothing has come out of that. And the promised oral communications at that session was woefully inadequate. He cut off speakers right and left, particularly me. And as you see, he feels so threatened by this kind of discussion that he threatens to arrest people. By the way, I suggest if at oral communications Kennedy or someone else says something which maligns you or misstates what you said, that you raise your hand and try to get the attention of Catherine Byers or Celia Scott. They have the power to recognize you and have you.